From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton. Signature gathering for the campaign to recall Governor Mike Dunleavy is about to begin. The Alaska Division of Elections is scheduled to deliver the booklets today that recall Dunleavy organizers will use. They say they'll mail them around the state from Anchorage starting tomorrow. The campaign must gather more than 71,000 signatures to hold the recall election. Recall organizers gathered more than 46,000 signatures over 5 weeks to apply for the recall, but to get the recall on the ballot, they'll have to start from zero. Recall organizers have said that they want to hold the election as soon as possible. To ensure a special election before the August 18th primary, they must submit the petition before April 20th. Recall kickoff events are scheduled for Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau next weekend. The recall could still be stopped if the Alaska Supreme Court overrules a Superior Court decision that allowed the petition to move forward. Oral arguments in the case are scheduled for March 25th. The Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center in Juneau is getting closer to being updated. The 1960s building could be expanded, and the national forest land around it could be used differently to address more tourists and a shrinking glacier. Around 500,000 people visit the glacier annually in the summer, but in 30 years or so, visitors might not be able to see the Mendenhall Glacier from the visitor center at all. The Forest Service is preparing for that reality. The agency held an open house last night to discuss the new plans, which have been in the works for a number of years. Most notably, the plans include motorized boat docks for vessels to carry people across the lake to the glacier's face, where a remote visitor center would be built. Brad Orr from the Juneau Ranger District says people want to get close to the ice.
People want to be able to actually go to the glacier itself, not just to come here and look at the glacier from a distance, but to actually go to the glacier.
In May, John Neary, the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center director, retired. Neary was a proponent of electric boats instead of diesel-powered ones. The plans don't yet specify what type of craft could be on the water, but Orr says that could be decided later. Lori Craig, a retired Forest Service employee, isn't sure about the proposals in the plan. She'd like to see a more thorough risk and environmental assessment before public comments are finalized. She worries about getting people too close to a receding glacier.
The idea of chasing the ice by going over to that little corner, I hate to say it, but I think we've lost that battle. And what we have now is a big pile of gravel with some ice that could be kind of dangerous, and I don't know that we want to get people that close to it.
The public comment period for the plans closes March 19th. A final decision is expected to be made by September of this year. Starting in October, if you want to fly on a commercial flight anywhere in the United States, you will need a federally compliant real ID or an official alternative like a passport. And getting one of those IDs can be burdensome. It requires a lot of documentation, and lines at the DMV can last 3 hours or longer. And that's only if your community has a DMV in the first place. As KOTZ's Wesley Early reports, lawmakers and state officials haven't figured out still how to help rural Alaskans get their IDs.
Many, if not most, rural residents will need access to flights for medical appointments or emergencies at some point.
In case of life-threatening emergencies, patients are often medevaced to Anchorage or Seattle. And once they get better and are able to return home, they'll have to take a regular flight back home. So all these scenarios happen routinely and will require that patients have a compliant ID by October 1st under the current act.
That's Jacqueline Bergstrom, Executive Director of Medical Services for the Tanana Chiefs Conference. Bergstrom is concerned that if villagers can't get real IDs, they may get stranded after medical flights. State lawmakers in the House Tribal Affairs Committee heard testimony Thursday from Bergstrom and other rural Alaska leaders who were concerned about getting real IDs for their communities and want lawmakers to help. Melanie Banke is the CEO of Kowarik, a tribal consortium in the Bering Straits region.
I do think it's the legislature's job to appropriate funding to ensure that every village in the state of Alaska has somebody going to their community at least once. And providing that as an opportunity versus a community of 800 people trying to fly into Nome to obtain their real ID.
Even if a village could organize flying everyone who wanted a real ID to the nearest hub DMV, it would be expensive. Round-trip tictickets from surrounding villages to Kotzebue can cost as much as $600. Charlie Nelson is vice president and tribal affairs head for Manilik Health Consortium based in the Northwest Arctic Borough. He says Kotzebue's DMV hours are very limited since the one person who works there also works as an admin for the local police department. Oh, and also, it's closed on Wednesdays for road tests.
DMV office is only open for 4 hours a day. When that person is out sick or has other issues, personal and or business, it is usually closed, so we don't have any direct access to it on a full-time need.
The state has been trying to solve this problem for a while now without much success so far. Last year, it put out a pitch for Alaskans to donate to the State Department of Motor Vehicles to get workers out to rural communities, though they've since ditched that idea. Then there's a state mobile DMV pilot program that's been going through villages to help get tribal members signed up, though it's not always on the state's dime. Now, the state has been pushing for residents to use alternatives to the Real ID when the deadline hits. Those include passports, military IDs, and federally recognized tribal IDs with photos. With the October deadline looming, Representative Tiffany Zolkowski of Bethel, who chairs the House Tribal Affairs Committee, told the DMV representative at the hearing that the department should be more proactive in explaining Real ID alternatives to tribes.
If it's being shared with a group of legislators, it seems like it could be shared as a letter to a Dear Tribal Leader letter, so people know what opportunities there are to meet other standards, specifically if the department is relying on tribal IDs as an alternative option, but something to consider moving forward.
One more wrinkle is that even with the tribal IDs, tribal officials are concerned that the local TSA officials have not all been trained properly on recognizing the various forms of acceptable IDs. Additionally, Banky with Kowarik says just because someone is an enrolled tribal member of a tribe, it doesn't mean they live there.
I don't want to be stranded somewhere and just thinking that the TSA officer is going to accept my native village of Savunga issued tribal ID. I'm a state citizen and I should have the access to state issued real ID.
Including the alternatives, the state DMV estimates that about 6,700 rural Alaskans who don't have a DMV in their community still need help with getting an ID. Calls made to the state DMV office concerning state outreach went unanswered as of this report. Reporting in Kotzebue, I'm Wesley Early.
Ketchikan's city council doesn't believe the cruise industry should be policing itself. That's one message that came out of the council's Tuesday meeting. KRBD's Eric Stone says some local officials are skeptical that an industry-backed bill making its way through the state legislature right now would serve the same function as the Ocean Ranger program.
Ocean Rangers are, or were, Coast Guard-licensed marine engineers tasked with making sure that cruise ships follow wastewater rules while in Alaska's waters. But Governor Mike Dunleavy shut down the voter-approved program last year. He vetoed the program's industry funding, and that effectively scrapped it for 2020 and beyond. State officials have said that during the 12 years that the program existed, Ocean Rangers found hundreds of potential violations. But just six of those were elevated to formal notices of violation from the state. Ketchikan City Councilmember Mark Flora says that's no coincidence.
If there haven't been a lot of noted egregious violations, doesn't that speak to the fact that it works?
The governor has proposed replacing the onboard monitors with shore-based inspectors. Cruise lines would get a discount on the $5 per passenger fee that funds the program if they install electronic systems to monitor the ship's wastewater systems. But Flora is skeptical.
Isn't this kind of this proposed bill, the industry saying, don't worry, we got it?
Councilmember Sam Bergeron says he doesn't love the prospect of cruise lines monitoring themselves.
I think that if you have systems that can be manipulated and left up to industry, that we're having a far less reliable and accurate representation of what's truly going on with that thing. For me, I want bodies on the ship.
Ketchikan City Manager has sent a letter to the state asking it to reinstate the Ocean Ranger program. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
The National Transportation Safety Board says Alaska needs a comprehensive effort to improve aviation safety. The board on Thursday issued a safety recommendation to the Federal Aviation Administration, calling for the formation of a working group to help improve safety in the state, where the aviation accident rate from 2008 to 2017 was more than two times higher than the rest of the United States. The board says the group should review, rank, and integrate Alaska's unique aviation needs into the FAA's efforts to increase safety.